I mean, it's somewhat of a loss to be Pesach Bichvayto Achsanya, because it seems to be that there are two different Achsanyas over here. There are two different hosts. If I could put it in yeshivish terms, there's a Cheftza and there's a Gavra. The Cheftza is the yeshiva and the Rosh Yeshiva. I don't know each of them, but I do know Rabbi Luban, because I know his brother very well. So Birshus the Rosh Yeshiva and Anholas HaYeshiva, that's the Cheftza of the Mokum. But the Gavra are really the Reish Kol of North Miami Beach, Rabbi Blezer and Rabbi Provalsky. And I must say that, you know, I arrived this afternoon, went to the hotel where I'm staying overnight, and usually someone comes and picks me up, but Rabbi Blezer picked me up himself. I'm sure he's a busy man. He's the Reish Kol. He has better things to do than act as an Uber. So I really want to thank him for extending me that kovet. The truth of the matter is that it has been many years that I've been to Miami to give a tshuva drasha. The reason for that is because I'm afraid of hurricanes. And this is the height of hurricane season. And when I was handling with Rabbi Provalsky about this drasha, I said, you know, I can only go to so many places, and if there's a hurricane, I'm not going to get stuck in Miami. It's a wonderful place, but I do have a day job, and I can't get stuck here. So I said, you know, if there's a chashash of a hurricane, thank you, I'm just going to cancel. And are you willing to do under those conditions? And they said, yes, Hamanas Kane, thank you, Hamanas Kane Anu Eisen. So when Dorian was scheduled to hit Miami, we all were somewhat apprehensive. Baruch Hashem, certainly for your people, that it didn't hit and you were spared. My wife and I took a short vacation right before the beginning of this month, and we chose to go to Charleston, South Carolina. So I don't know what it is about me, but apparently I am somewhat of a magnet to hurricanes. But we got there in and out before it actually hit. So I just want to thank all of the hosts for putting this together, which is not as easy as it looks. And as Rabbi Blezer mentioned, it's famous in a medrash that Banishkin says people come to hear Divrei Tshuva. That in itself is Mechilas Avonos. You get Mechilas Avonos just for showing up. So whether, I hope my words will help you, but even without that, you're already zeicha to a portion of Mechilas Avonos by virtue of the fact that you're here. I'm sure that many of you feel like I do, that when we lay in these last parshiyos of Sefer Dvarim before the Yom HaNoraim, it's as though the Torah is talking to us. Particularly the psukim of Parshas Titzavim, when the Torah writes, Ki ha-mitzvah zeis asher anochi mitzavcha hayom lo lifnei sim v'chov alei rechai kahi. This mitzvah, which according to the Ramban is referring to the mitzvah of tshuva, it's not beyond you. It's not beyond your reach. It's not in the heavens. It's not in space. It's not across the river. It's as though the Ribbono Shel'Olam is telling us tshuva is not that hard. And you can do it. And it's close to you. And don't worry. It's not beyond your reach. Those are the psukim of Parshas Nitzavim. And yet, there's another pasuk in Parshas Nitzavim that I think it's always troubled me what that pasuk is about. Moshe Rabbeinu warns the people, Parshas Nitzavim on the last day of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. This is Moshe Rabbeinu's last Musar Shmuz, so to speak. And Moshe Rabbeinu writes and he says, Pen yesh b'chem isha isha, o mishpacha yishevet asher levavei paneh ayoyim im Hashem alekenu, o lechas laveres alkei agoyim hoheim. Lest there's someone amongst you who will be tempted to worship Avodah Zarah and to go and to serve other gods, the gods of the other nations. Moshe Rabbeinu warns what will happen if you do that. And nevertheless, Moshe Rabbeinu continues and says, V'hoya b'shamay es divrei ha'olah hazais. But lest there be a person that when he hears this olah, he hears this klala, he hears these curses about what will happen if you worship Avodah Zarah. Lemor shalom yi eli, ki b'shrus libi eilech. Lest there be a person amongst you who will say, shalom yi eli, shalom alai nafshi, I won't have any problem. Peace will be with me. And I will go as whatever my heart feels like. How could that be? How could anybody, after hearing the words of Moshe Rabbeinu, say, Shalom Yali doesn't affect me? Moshe Rabbeinu has a track record. He's been right for the last 40 years. So he doesn't believe Moshe Rabbeinu? He doesn't think Moshe Rabbeinu it's true? He's kidding? Is he not in touch with reality, this person? Is he in denial? The answer, I think, is that this person is a classic example of a psychological phenomenon that was identified more than 50 years ago called cognitive dissonance. Now, that's a highfalutin term. But what does that mean? Cognitive dissonance. So here's the textbook definition of cognitive dissonance. The mental discomfort experienced by a person who simultaneously holds two contradictory beliefs. Means I'm troubled because I'm believing in two things that are astira to each other, that are a contradiction. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu is warning over here. Yes, I know Moshe Rabbeinu is right. And if Moshe Rabbeinu says this is going to happen, it's going to happen. And yet somehow or another, he believes it won't affect him. It's what we call in the Olam HaYeshivas a stira, a contradiction. And that contradiction in his mind makes this person uncomfortable. That's cognitive dissonance. This discomfort that a person feels by holding two contradictory things at the same time. And somehow human beings have the capacity to somehow reconcile these two contradictory ideas and beliefs. To relieve this stress and discomfort that I have from going ahead and believing two different things that oppose each other. I think a classic example, a everyday example of cognitive dissonance is a person who smokes. I'm not here to offend anyone who smokes, but everybody knows that smoking is dangerous for your health. Besides the risk of cancer, rahmana litzlan, it increases the risk of heart disease and stroke and other maladies as well. So how can a person continue to smoke if he knows that it is in fact a fact that people get very seriously ill from smoking? So in order to relieve this tension, this stira, the person comes up with several rationalizations so that he shouldn't be tormented by this contradiction. I smoke and I know that smoking is bad. For instance, he says, if I exercise, it won't affect me. So I'll go to the gym. and therefore I'll be all right. Or he'll say, if I stop smoking, I'll gain weight. And gaining weight is more dangerous than smoking. Or he'll say that all the statistics, and Frum Yidin used to hold like this about 30 years ago, that all the statistics about smoking is only if you smoke 7 days a week. But if you don't only smoke 6 days a week, then it doesn't apply to you. So Mamela, Shalom Yi Ali, I'll be all right. And that is what cognitive dissonance means. And that is what our person in Parashas Nitzavim, who says Shalom Yi Ali, in spite of the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu is warning him what's going to happen, this is how somehow or another he reconciles, he rationalizes in his mind that Shalom Yi Ali. There are several examples in Tanakh of this very phenomenon. You know, on Yom Kippur, we're going to read the story of Yonah HaNavi. And that's perhaps part of the reason why we lay it. Yonah is a Navi. He spoke to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He knows that the Ribbono Shel Olam is omnipresent more than any person in this room, because he's spoken to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And he knows that the Ribbono Shel Olam is everywhere. And he knows that it is impossible to escape the Ribbono Shel Olam. And yet, he tries to run away. How can you do that? Because Yonah HaNavi had two opposing things that he was dealing with. Number one is the tzivoy of the Ribbono Shel Olam to go to the city of Nineveh and tell these people, and they will do tshuva. These non-Jews in Nineveh will do tshuva. That's a tzivoy Hashem. On the other hand, Yonah knew that they perhaps would do tshuva. They probably would do tshuva. And the non-Jews would do tshuva, and this would be a kitrug, this would be an indictment of Klal Yisrael, that the non-Jews do tshuva and you don't. So I can't live with this. And therefore you have to rationalize. And you have to try to run away, knowing full well you can't run away from the Ribbono Shel Olam. The story of Shaul HaMelech, when he's commanded to go ahead and to wipe out Amalek, is even perhaps a sharper example of cognitive dissonance and how a person can in fact rationalize almost anything. Shmuel HaNavi comes to Shaul HaMelech and tells him in no uncertain terms what he has to do. He has to wipe out Amalek, man, women, and child, and he has to wipe out all the livestock as well, and he has to kill Agog. There's no two ways you can learn the psukim. And what happens? Shaul HaMelech goes to Amalek. He goes and he kills the people, but he saves the livestock and he even saves Agog, Melech, Amalek. Shaul HaMelech comes back to Shmuel HaNavi. And the first words out of his mouth is Hakimaisi as Dvar Hashem. I have fulfilled the words of the Ribbono Shel Olam. What are you talking about? Hakimaisi Dvar Hashem? Uma kol hatzoyin asher anoichi shemea. Now what's that racket that I hear from all the cattle? And he doesn't have charot immediately. It takes him four times. How could he have done this? How could you say Hakimaisi Dvar Hashem when the Ribbono Shel Olam said kill the livestock and you didn't? Terence says he was tormented. The people wanted the livestock. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, kill the animals. I was tormented. So somehow or another, Shaul HaMelech made up in his mind that this was a kiyum of Hakimaisi Dvar Hashem. It's the same example as the Shalom Yi Ali. And now that we're all feeling good about ourselves and pointing fingers at the Shalom Yi Ali and pointing Chas V'Shalom at Yonah HaNavi and Shaul HaMelech. But the sad truth is that we do the same. We all come up with rationalizations. Because it is very, very difficult for human beings to say three words. I was wrong. And therefore we build these fantasies and rationalizations. You know, through the course of Yom Kippur, we will say Al-Chait 8 times. The second of the Al-Chaits is Al-Chait Shechatan Lefanecha Be'imutz HaLev. What does Be'imutz HaLev mean? Hardening of the heart. This is not talking about cholesterol. What does Imutz HaLev mean? Imutz HaLev means that I have difficulty admitting I was wrong. We refuse to admit that we may be wrong. And that's the first step of tshuva. And a person can be able to look at himself and say, I was wrong. And to be self-critical. He's never going to do tshuva. Rav Ben-Zion Cook, the Rav in Eretz Yisrael, once came to Rav Al-Yashiv, Zecher Tzadik Livroch, and asked him an etzah. There was a shidduch that was suggested and proposed for his daughter. The bocher came highly recommended, a terrific bocher, a big masmid, a lamdin, a baki, chosh of a family, ala milis. The bocher only had one chisorin. He skipped Musar Seder. And he refused to go to the Musar Shmuzin. For those of you who are not perhaps familiar with the Seder HaYeshiva, but there's Musar Shmuzin, in which the Mashkiach or the Rashiva gets up in the Beis Medrash and he points out people's mistakes and people's foibles and how people are wrong and they have to correct. It's self-examination. This Bacher didn't come to the Shmuzin and didn't learn Musar Seder. Other than that, the guy's perfect. Rav Cook goes to Rav Al-Yashim and says, should I take the shidduch? Now, if I would take a poll, I would believe that most of you would say, of course you should take the shidduch. Most of you didn't go to Musar Seder either. Rav Al-Yashim told him, don't take the shidduch. Why is that? Because a bacher who has no shaychus to Musar will not be introspective and self-critical. And he won't accept responsibility. He won't be able to say, I'm wrong. And if that's the case, there can be shalom bias problems. Because when issues will come up in a marriage, he'll seek to blame everyone but himself. It's my wife's fault. It's my mother-in-law's fault. It's my Rashiva's fault. It's everybody else's fault, but it's not my fault. And that is a recipe for shalom bias problems. Because we have to be able to admit I was wrong. So what does this have to do with our tshuva? I have to assume that Rova, the vast majority, if not everyone sitting in this room, are Shomei Torah mitzvahs. We keep Shabbos. We keep Kashrus. We keep Taras HaMishpacha. We learn every single day. We support our husband learning. We enable our children to learn. I am looking at the shufa, the creme de la creme of Kol Yisrael. And I'm giving a Musar Shmuz and a tshuva drush about what? What's there to do tshuva on? The answer is that all of us, in spite of this long list of what we do right, have certain inconsistencies in our lives. And for people like ourselves, this is what we have to do over the next few weeks and what we have to do in Yom Kippur, and that is to look at the mirror and ask ourselves, do I live with certain inconsistencies in my life? Yes, I am a Shomer Mitzvah B'Tachlis. Yes, I go ahead and put on tefillin. I may even put on Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin. I do all of these things, and I learn. But do we live 100% consistent lives? Are there steerists in our lives? And that, I think, is the tshuva for people like ourselves, Shomrei Torah mitzvahs. Are we consistent? Because if we are willing to live with our inconsistencies, we will never grow. We will never grow. We will be shalom alai nafshi people. Shalom yali. You know, the Mefarshim in Chumash are bothered by a very interesting question. The Torah enumerates the non-kosher animals. In order for an animal to be kosher, it has to have two simonim, it has to have split hooves, and it has to chew its cud. And when the Torah goes ahead and lists the animals that are not kosher, it lists, for instance, the camel or the pig. And the Torah tells us, yes, they may have one of the signs, they may chew their cud, or they may have split hooves, but they don't have both. And if you don't have both, it's not a kosher animal. Then why does the Torah have to tell us, yes, the pig has a split hoof, but it doesn't chew his cud? If you don't have both, you're not kosher. End of discussion. Then why does the Torah have to say, it has this, but it's still not kosher, it doesn't have both? That's irrelevant. Rabbi Yeborach Finkel, Zichrono Livracha, sees in this a metaphor to human beings. Yes, the animal isn't kosher because it doesn't have both. But what the Torah is trying to tell us over here is a metaphor for human beings, people that have one sign of kashrus, and they have aspects of kashrus. And there are parts of their lives that are 100% kosher. But yet they're still not kosher. Because there's inconsistencies. And they engage in the type of behavior that a fruma yid should not be engaged in. Take for instance the issue of honesty. Of how we deal in business, how we deal with insurance companies, how we deal with government programs, and generally, how do we act in the workplace? Do we give our employers an honest day's work? A whole honest day's work. Listen to a Rambam in Hilchos Schiras. Zok the Rambam, the chayin chayiv lo avayt b'chol koichoy shahari Yaakov hatzadik omar ki b'chol koichi avadati es avichem. You have to give your boss, your employer, whoever it may be, an honest day's worth work. Shahari Yaakov hatzadik omar ki b'chol koichi avadati es avichem. Yaakov Avinu had every right and every rationalization in the world to go ahead and to cheat Lavan. Lavan was a crook. He was a used car salesman. He cheated him left and right. So if I have to go ahead and have to cut corners with Lavan, that shouldn't be a problem. And Yaakov Avinu refused to do that, and he said, "B'chol koichi avadati es avichem." I looked it up. There are 8 times in the Rambam that the Rambam mentions Yaakov Avinu. There's only 1 time in all of the Rambam that the Rambam calls Yaakov Hatzadik. And where is that? Because he was erelach, because he was honest. That makes him a tzaddik. A tzaddik is not necessarily a person who davens along Shemini Esrei. A tzaddik is not necessarily a person who goes to the mikveh every day. A tzaddik is a person that's erelach, that's honest, that does an honest day's job. My father-in-law, Zichrono Livracha, Rabbi Yaakov Blumenkrantz, was a fundraiser for the Ne'er Izzo Rabbinical College in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. In the 1940s, he didn't have his own car. So how did he get downtown to see people to donate money to the yeshiva? He got bus fare, he got car fare. And he would go see people and solicit money for the yeshiva. Once he was one downtown, and he met someone from the Frum community, and the person offered him to take him right back into his home, to the yeshiva, which he accepted, saved him the tirch of going on the bus. The next day, Rabbi Isai, ladies and gentlemen, Rabbi Blumenkrantz went to the secretary in the yeshiva, and any of you who are old Neri Yisrael people will remember Mrs. Rose Liebtag. He went to Mrs. Liebtag and he returned the car fare that the yeshiva gave him to go downtown. Now this is the 1940s. What was the car fare? A nickel? 25 cents? But he gave it back. She told me this. I never heard this from him. He died before I married his daughter. But this is what Mrs. Liebtag told me. Because he was an Ehrlich Yid. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the average worker spends an hour and 5 minutes a day looking at various websites. That does not include checking one's cell phone and sending texts. That's also part of the Alchetz. Bedasu v'mirma, violating how the Torah tells us to treat customers, competitors, workers, and employees. We all know why it's such a nisoyon to cheat. Because to be a Frumah Yid, a religious Jew today, cost a ton of money. It's very expensive to be a Frumah Yid. Besides the Yomim Tovim, besides the Schar Limud, the tuition, and the camps that we must send our children to, and the chasanis and the bar mitzvahs that we have to make, it takes hundreds of thousands of dollars to be a go ahead and to have a typical Jewish lifestyle, and we're not talking about the size of families. So we are under tremendous pressure, and we can rationalize it and say, listen, I have to send my kids to camp. I have to support a son-in-law. But the Torah says you can't do that. And as important the honesty issue is, there's even a larger issue at stake. And that's the issue of emunah. One of the most off-sided things that people say is that Mizaneisim Shalonim is Ksuvim Loimi Rosh Hashanah Le Rosh Hashanah. This Rosh Hashanah, it's going to be decided to the penny how much I'm going to make. Everybody quotes that. But do we really believe that? Or is it just lip service? You think maybe we can outsmart the government, or outsmart our employer, or outsmart the insurance company. But we can't outsmart the Riflenish Shalayla. You know, the Gemara tells us that after we leave this world, when we go up to the Yeshiva Shemailim, the Rebbeinu Shlomo is going to ask us, Nasasa v'nasata be'amuna, were you honest when it came to business? So recently I saw a different insight in that. Nasasa v'nasata be'amuna does not only mean, are you honest when it comes to business, but Nasasa v'nasata be'amuna, if you believe in me, if you believe that I provide the parnasa, then why are you cheating? Nasasa nasata be'emuna. The gleips to the gleips nisht. You believe or you don't believe. And being honest is not the only nisoyin that we face in our quest for parnasa. Here's a story provided by an employer who has a company with many Frum Jews. Listen to this story. We had a Frum salesman who came to the manager one day to hand him the file of his largest customer. He said he can no longer visit this customer as he is simply too attracted to the female buyer and in a panic told his boss, "I never want to see her again. I can't control my Yetzer Hara. Whatever the financial repercussions will be, I'm sorry, I have to be able to desist from seeing this woman." That, Meirav Rabbeisai, is an example of a person that felt he was living with an inconsistency and it just wasn't right, and he was willing to walk away from it. Because it's inconsistent. You're from a Yid? Now you're thinking about another woman? And rather than making excuses and rationalizations, he said to himself, "It's just not right." And that, Meirav Rabbeisai, is the essence of what I'm trying to convey tonight. That we have to look at situations that come up in our life and say, guess what? This is just not right. The happy ending is this fellow became more successful and went on to Aliyah. He built a beautiful family. He never became a gvir, but he was a gibor. Because he said to himself those words, "This is just not right." I heard of another fellow, a Rebbe, a day school teacher, who, like most day school teachers, had a very difficult time making ends meet. So how did he do this? How did he make his ends meet? He sold his airline miles. And he was about to sell, he accumulated a lot of miles, he was about to sell them for $3,000. For to him, that was a lot of money. Now it seems, and I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a judge and I now don't know the law, but it seems that there is some question. The airlines think that this is not legal. I'm not here to go ahead and to paskin that shaila, whether it's legal or not legal. But he had heard that the airlines think that this is not legal. You're not allowed to sell your miles. And you know what he did? He didn't sell them. Because he said to those words, to himself those words, "This is just not right." And truth be told, this is the area where some people will find inconsistencies in their lives. And that is the dichotomy that exists between how we act in shul, how we act at home, and how we act at work. And we sometimes engage in the type of behavior that we would not do in shul, at home, or in front of other frumayin. And I'm specifically referring to how people act with members of the opposite gender. And this is not only an issue that applies to men. It's an issue that applies to both men and women. There's a relatively new book called Making It All Work, with the subtitle, Women Surviving and Thriving in the Workplace. It's written by a fellow who I happen to know named Ari Wasserman, who's a graduate of Harvard Law School, practiced law for many years, went into business, became quite successful, moved to Eretz Yisrael, teaches in Or Sameach, and is an author. And he spent a considerable amount of time dealing with the issue of women in the workplace and the issues that they face. Here are several quotes from the book before we get to quotes from actual women. "The top-ranked workplace challenge reported by many from women relates to men. This problem is compounded by coworkers generally being on better behavior at work than they are at home. At home, he yells at his wife. At work, he reigns in his temper. At home, she walks around without makeup and in her robe and slippers. At work, she looks her best while wearing nice clothing. At work, the coworker of the opposite gender is ever so supportive. At home, there are dirty diapers, bills to pay, and a testy spouse. At work, there is success, team spirit, and a feeling of being appreciated. At home, a woman has to self-affirm. All this makes the workplace an escape for many and therefore fertile ground for developing relationships that they should steer clear of. And here are the words of some of the women he interviewed. I am not making these up. These are verbatim quotes and they are footnoted. Listen to one woman. You start knowing and understanding each other really well after working together for many years. And then it could happen. I had that feeling with my boss. I knew his family very well because this was a family business and his wife visited often. I got to know her well and saw she was a difficult woman. It was obvious that she didn't understand him. Not like I understood him. And he understood me too. I knew what he was thinking. I could finish his sentences. But he was a God-fearing man. And I was a frum woman. So we set boundaries, and we never let anything go past that. But still, the thoughts themselves were wrong and a betrayal of our respective values. It just wasn't right. And this does not only happen in corporate America, in secular workplace. It can happen in frum workplaces. Frum men, frum women. What could be better? Here's another testimonial. Many women naively feel that if they are working in a good frum environment, they don't need to be as careful around men. But in my experience, they should be even more careful, precisely because of the inherent familiarity, because we understand so much about each other, because we live in the same communities and know each other's family, we tend to let our guard down. And this is particularly nageya, single women who have not perhaps found their shidduch yet. They make easy prey for men who pay them a compliment and make them feel good about themselves just when they feel at their lowest. I read an account of a frum employer that is mostly frum workers. He hired a Satmar girl straight out of high school. He noticed that there was a frum man who started paying a lot of attention to her, started flirting with her, and she was enjoying it. It may have been her first contact with a man who was not part of her family. The employer felt he had to put a stop to this and told the guy to back off. We speak about echad bepeh ve'echad belev, but there's another inconsistency. It's echad bebayis ve'echad beshul ve'echad beworkplace. Or how about the dichotomy between how we act when we're home and how we act when we are on vacation? You know, I hear about frum people, graduates of yeshiva, that go to places for vacation that really a frum yid has no business being there. How do you reconcile that? How do you live with that inconsistency? The answer is It's vacation. Vacation, hutra kolach avilas. That's inconsistency. I can't stand here and list all the variables and all the places that this could crop up. But this is my one message. Are we living consistent lives? Is there one part of our life, maybe a small little corner, that we all know this is not right for a Ben Terah, it's not right for a Fumiyid? That's the tshuva that people like us have to do. The truth of the matter is that this is not a new issue. And I'm certainly not the first person in history to talk about this. Nonetheless, a personage than Eliyahu HaNavi was bothered by this. In that famous meeting of Eliyahu HaNavi with the Nevi'i HaBaal, with the false prophets of the Baal on Har HaKarmel, when Eliyahu goes and says, Vayigash Eliyahu el Kolom Vayemer Ad Mosai Atem Peschim Al Shtei HaSeifim, how long, how much longer will you straddle the fence? One day we are with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and the next day we are with the Baal. Make up your minds. Be honest with yourself. Don't be inconsistent. And an even more shocking statement, Eliyahu continues and he says, "V'zel l'shoynoi, im Hashem Elokim l'chu acharov, v'im Habal l'chu acharov." If you believe in God, then be an Eved Hashem. You believe in Baal, then believe in Baal. Do you mean to tell me Eliyahu HaNavi is advocating Avodah Zarah? V'im Habal l'chu acharov? And if you believe in Baal, then go ahead, gesunte hate, chas v'sholem. What he's advocating is consistency. And what he's saying is, I can bring a person back if he's honest with himself. The person says, I'm sorry, I'm an Eved Avodah Zarah, I believe in it. I can reach that person. Because at least he's consistent. But ein tog hind, and then the next day they're different? Ain't come to be banished on one day, they're banished on the next day, a Baal? No. That person is faking himself out. Much harder to reach him. That's what that posuk means about the non-kosher animals. Ironically, the non-kosher animal that has one simen is more treif than the animal has no seam on him. Because it's a metaphor to people. The people that know that they're treif, they know they have to do tshuva. The people that think that they're half kosher are hard to reach. When Rivka was pregnant with Yaakov and Esav, she felt this by Yisraitzesu Habonim Bekirba. She felt this inconsistency. She'd go by the base medrash, and the baby would want to come out. She'd go by the base Avodah Zarah, and the baby would want to come out. She says, "What's going on? I'm pregnant with a being that's so mixed up between base medrash and base Avodah Zarah." So what did she do? Rabbi Seinu Dorshu Loshem Yitzchak Shaya Averes Apischei Torah Shel Shem Ve'Ever Yaakov Rots. We went to the yeshiva. Yaakov wanted to come out. Averes Apischei Averes Zorah Esam Afarches. And what is she told? Shnei Goyim Bevidnechu Shnei Lumim Magnets. You're pregnant with twins. And then she was all right with that. She's all right with that. She's all right with a son that's going to be an Eved Avodah Zarah. The Teretz is, she's more all right with that than one child that's both. That's one day Avodah Zarah and one day Beis HaMedrash. I'll have two children. I'll try to work on them. But ain't kin, but one child that's so mixed up? What am I going to do with that? Now, we're honest people. We're Ehrlich people. How do we live with our inconsistencies? And the answer is, as we began, because we rationalize. And we say, the Ribbono Shel Olam understands. He knows I'm human. I try my best. I'm far better than 95-99% of the people on the planet. And I'm far better than 90%+ of all Jews. I'm a Shomer Shabbos. I wear tefillin. I keep Taras HaMishpocha. I raise my children. I'm great. Because we all say, like that person in the Parsha, Shalom Yeli, God will understand. And Hashkafa of Shalom Yeli is the route to not to lack of growth. We'll never grow. We'll never be better. We all know how Yom Kippur ends. We're tired. We're hungry. It's an ilah. We're at the end of our strengths. And you know what we do at that time? We say those words, Hashem hu Elohim, Hashem hu Elohim. For those of you who ever davened in the yeshiva, the words literally bounce off the walls. They echo. You know when those words were first said? Those words were said on Har HaKarmel, when Eliyahu HaNavi challenged the people and said, Amosai Atem Peishim Ashtei Asipim. When he challenged the people and he said, how long are you going to be inconsistent? That's when those words were said. Those words, Hashem Hu Elohim, were said in response to that question. No, I got it. Hashem Hu Elohim, Hashem Hu Elohim. It's as though Eliyahu HaNavi comes to every shul and every Beis Medrash across the world, like he comes on the night of Pesach and he visits every Seder. And it's though Eliyahu HaNavi is asking us, Bishas Nila, Admosai Atem Pesachim Ashrei Asifim. How long are you going to be inconsistent? This Eliyahu HaNavi, who's with us the entire year, he's with us on Pesach, he's with us on every bris, he comes to us on like Nila by Yom Kippur, and he says, and he's saying to us, Admos Atem Pesach Moshe Asifim. And when we say those words, 7 times, Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim, that's what our response is. I've looked at my life. I've spent Aseres Yemei Tshuva examining myself. I see the inconsistencies, and I'm going to correct them. I'm going to stand up and be counted. And that's the import of those words, Hashem Hu Elokim. It is our job. It's 2 weeks from Rosh Hashanah. It's our job over the next 2 weeks, and especially in those Aseres Yemei Tshuva, this self-examination of are there inconsistencies in our lives? So that when we get to Ne'ilah, we'll indeed be able to utter those words, Hashem Elokim, and to really mean it. Aksiyo Siva Taiva, and a good Kabbalistic Yar.